we can work wonders.
This report was brought to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
And opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
The only good Indian is a dead Indian.
Welcome to Native Spirit Radio here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I'm Rhonda, your host here for the next hour. Make sure you stay tuned the next half hour. I'll be doing your news across Indian country, letting you know what's going on out there. And we'll be starting off remembering the life of one of our Diné code talkers, and sadly, this gentleman passed away this Friday, and that was code talker Dan Aki Sr. He passed away on Friday. He was a member of the Armed Forces. He became a member of the code talker team attached to the 4th Marine Division of the 25th Regiment. He took part in conflicts on 4 Pacific Islands, and most notably, Iwo Jima. So, any of you know that we like to honor our veterans and make sure we honor them in a good way. I want to play the Diné flag song and send prayers out to the family of Dan Aki, Navajo code talker, who passed away this Friday at the age of 96.
Hey, 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 hey
Indians. Let me tell you about Indians. There's Hollywood Indians, they're fry bread eating Indians, there's wannabe Indians, they're fat, skinny, tall, blonde Indians. Let me tell you about Indians. Some are stoic Indians, Indians that ride hogs, Indians that ride Indians. Some are long-haired, beautiful Indians. Some are radical, free Leonard Peltier Indians. Some of them just don't give a damn Indians. Frankly, I like the type of Indians that always agree to be last on display Indians. Indians. Types that like to party and get drunk Indians. Types that like to fight other Indians. Types that like to fight. Go to a powwow, see them in their beautiful regalia, wicked smile, glint in their eyes, Indians. She was from Iowa, looking for an Indian. It didn't matter what kind, just one taller than her. Hey, you wanna see my horses? I met you in the Pueblo. You told me you loved the brown adobe architecture, the church walls painted with cheap stucco. Inside were promises, hundreds of unsure Indians still waiting for something, not too sure of what. And when you're not too sure, very few treasures turn to gold. We spent time that summer. You fell in love. Why? I needed a ride to Santa Fe, so I showed you my horses. I showed you my horses. Carried us east to west, north to south, south to north, west to east. We ran into the winds, secrets were sculpted by two naked, sweaty bodies in the desert moonlight. I broke your heart? You said I broke your heart. It's not the first time this Indian has done it. I need a ride to Copper Mountain, Colorado, so you oblige. And when you're not too sure, very few Indians I know have ever turned to gold. Hey, you wanna see my horses? Take you to the hot springs too. Another one just like you to give me a ride to Tulsa, and I will oblige. Besides, very few treasures turn to gold, but all intentions have their own karmic goals.
All right, that was Robert Mirabel and Indians. Before that, we had The Tribe, and this was a group singing with them, Bear Heart Singers singing a warrior song, and then we started off with the Dene flag song in honor of our Dene code talker, Dan Aki, who passed on this past Friday at the age of 96. All right, well, let's go back into the music, and I had some new music for you guys, and this is, we do have natives that do country, and so I got this CD. It's Kelly Derrickson, and she is from up north, and traces her lineage back to Chief Joseph of the Nez Perce tribe. And her father has been a chief before for his people, and so she's been heavily influenced by music. She has her bachelor's degree in professional music and music business, but she's always enjoyed doing country music. And so this is Kelly Derrickson CD called Warriors of Love, and I'll play the title track from this. This is Kelly Derrickson and Warriors of Love. You're listening to Native Spirit Radio here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Hear the prayer of all God's creatures, feel the earth's heartbeat. Barefoot in the forest green or in the desert heat. Love is what it's all about. Great Spirit, hold our hands. Teach us now, for it's too late to give back to the land. We are warriors of love. We are warriors of love. Smile until the sun. Soon we are warriors, warriors of love. Turn your faith and kindness into living acts of love. Warm the coldest, darkest hearts like sunshine from above. We're not here forever, the earth's not yours or mine. We are learning, we are learning, pray we still have. We are warriors of love.
Hey, warriors of love.
We are warriors of love.
Hey, warriors of love.
Smile until the sun and make love to the moon. Magic of the ocean will inspire you. Gift of grace is given. We better find it soon.
Warriors of love.
Warriors of love.
Hey,
warriors.
way. Ah, ah, ah. That's how I know you'll come crawling back to me again.
Fun days for me growing up. Aloha, wahine Hawaii wau, maha
Tasana hohino puhu.
Because, you know, we're talking for the future generations.
I'm Conroy Chino, introducing you to Living Voices, profiles of Native Americans and Native Hawaiians today. Growing up in the seal camps across the bay from Kotzebue, Alaska, Dolly Spencer, Inupiat, learned from her mother how to work seal skins, split sinew, and make waterproof mukluks. To earn extra income, in 1965 she began to make dolls with the faces of famous Alaskans, dressing them with Native materials. Today, Dolly Spencer's dolls, in clothing made from seal, salmon, or halibut skins, are sought after by collectors and museums.
We're like nomads, one camp to another. We lived the old way, and it was fun days for me growing up. And we had all these dogs, and we had all the puppies I play with and teach them how to pull, and it was fun. We live in a sod house in a fall time. Summertime, we lived in tents, wall tents. And years ago, they had skin tents, but I was raised the time they had wall tents, canvas tents. And my dad was a subsistence hunter. We live off the land and travel on my dad's uncle's skin boat back and forth to the camps. I watched my mother do all her sealskin work. When I was 14, I said, Mom, I need parasols on new muckluks. And you know how teenagers say, you got to have new muckluks now and then. She looked at me for a while. She said, you know how. You do it yourself. She said that to me in a nice way, you know. You know how to do it. You do it yourself. So I felt so let down because I had to do my own Ugruk soul crimping. But I did it. I watched her enough to do it. I forgot all about that sewing stuff until 1965. A friend of mine, Billy Buck in Glen Allen, he carved a little head and asked me to dress it, so I did. My husband said, what are you doing now? I said, well, I'm going to make a doll. He said, ha, ha, ha. That doll I dressed is here somewhere. And he put it on a little dog team and took picture of it. He carved the dogs and the sled, and I dressed the doll for him. Wow. They put it in an Alaska newspaper, Alaska Sportsman, one year. This curator and I, they asked me to make the dolls look like this area. We did research on it, how they probably dressed down here. I went to the library, looked in the books there, how they made the king salmon mukluks. I tanned the king salmon and made mukluks, and I got the little halibut, about a foot long halibut that's just right to tan. They tan real good. They're real beautiful skin when you do them. They're like velvet inside when you tan them. They always ask me if that's snake skin when I display my king salmon skin down south. They ask if it's snake. No, king salmon. The Victoria, BC Museum wanted me to make large-size muckluks out of king salmon. They want a life-size pair. That'd take about four king salmons, maybe. Dividivit's family, girls, they outgrow their dolls, so they gave all their nine dolls to us. My sister buried one. It had a bad neck, so her and her girlfriend buried it. So some archaeologists will dig it out down Ceiling Point. Look what's been here for years.
Today's interview of Dolly Spencer was conducted by Sue Kernis. Living Voices is a project of the Smithsonian Institution, National Museum of the American Indian. Executive producers Kevin Lewis and Elizabeth Weatherford. Project coordinator Nan Rubin. Writers Peggy Berryhill and Ginger Miles. Mixed at Mercer Street Sound. For more information, check out our website at www.si.edu/NMAI. For Living Voices, I'm Conroy Chino.
Registration deadlines for the November 8th election are October 12th in Missouri and 18th in Kansas. If you've moved, you must re-register at your new address. Registered voters in Kansas should check their status on the website of their county election office because Kansas reportedly has programs to remove names from the voter rolls. This message is a public service of 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Do you have a car, truck, or boat you no longer need? Please donate it to KKFI. Please call Bill at 816-994-7869.
All right, you're listening to Native Spirit Radio here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. You know, that was the interview with Dolly Spencer off the Living Voices CD. And then we heard from Young Spirit, and then our premiere of Kelly Derrickson, Warriors of Love, off of her title CD, Warriors of Love. And you can go to her website, kellyderrickson.com, to find out more information about her. She's also participated in the Idle No More movement in Canada. You know, and that's really awesome to have, you know, different people working with us and trying to get that information out about different issues going on across Indian country. All right, well, we're going to be talking about your news across Indian country right now. And like I started off the show, fortunately, sad news, we had the passing of a Navajo Nation code talker. That was Dan Akee Sr. on Friday, October 14th. He was 96 years old when he walked on. According to Akee's son, Dan Jr., his father was born just north of the coal mine chapter house on November 11, 1919. In 1944, he joined the armed forces when he heard they were recruiting Navajos. He became a member of the Code Talker team attached to the 4th Marine Division of the 25th Regiment. He took part in conflicts on four Pacific islands, and most notably Iwo Jima. Akee's son told that his father was at the Battle of Iwo Jima when six Marines, including Gila River Indian Community member Ira Hayes, raised the U.S. flag atop Mount Suribachi. President Begay and Vice President Nez established a great relationship with Dan Akee Sr. when they assisted in renovating his house this past February. Akee had said it was his dream to move back into the house he built. Quote, we gutted the bathroom, removed the appliances, replaced windows and window frames, and tore down walls with the help of local volunteer groups, Red Feather Development, and Tuba City Veterans Office. We were able to renovate his home from top to bottom, President Begay stated. The president said it was an honor to assist the code talker. He also noted that the code talker he rode with OPVP during this year's Navajo Nation and Northern Navajo Nation fair parades. Akee Jr., who is a board member of the Code Talkers Association, said that he and his siblings would like to thank their father for his service to the United States. My father always told us to be proud of speaking the Navajo language, he said. Always be careful of the words you speak, as they are sacred, he would warn us. Vice President Jonathan Nez said he was saddened to learn about the passing of Dan Akee Sr., but commended his service to the Marines as a Navajo code talker. Our Navajo code talkers, including Dan Akee, defended the United States against the interception of critical information and strategies by encoding messages into the Navajo language. This code was never broken and is a great part of the proud history of our people, he said. He helped to move the nation forward. And as such, we grieve the loss of our Navajo code talker, President Begay stated. We send our deepest condolences to his family and will order all flags to be flown at half staff. At this time, the Office of the President and Vice President is calling upon the Navajo people to keep the Akee family in their prayers. Please send condolences to their families. And yes, send prayers out to the family. They're going through this right now. All right, well, this is a strange story. Coming out of Nevada, there was a Native rights event going on in Reno, and this guy, like, people were doing a march, and this truck apparently was upset because they were blocking the road, and he gunned his truck and basically ran into the group of people that were there, and he hurt people, but he is not. I guess he hasn't been put in jail yet. So an 18-year-old man is being investigated for driving his car through a crowd at a Native rights event in Reno, Nevada. Participants in the event captured numerous photos and video of the man driving the truck through the event on Monday. They want to know why he hasn't been arrested or been charged, especially since one person was hospitalized. It was clear the driver acted intentionally, Quanah Parker Brightman, the executive director of the United Native Americans, told the Associated Press. According to photos shared by participants on social media, the driver and his passenger were seen in the vicinity of the event almost the entire time before the incident. It was a hate crime, Brightman told the Reno Gazette Journal. The event was held to call for the elimination of Columbus Day and to show solidarity with the No DAPL movement. So, yeah, that happened this past Monday, and this gentleman has still not been charged with anything. So it's kind of odd. All right, well, out of Connecticut, officials at Yale University in Connecticut offered apologies for using stereotypical and racist images in an official football program. The Association of Native Americans at Yale condemned the use of the images, which were chosen because the Yale Bulldogs played against Dartmouth College on Saturday. Dartmouth's unofficial mascot was once an Indian, and images depicted a stereotypical Indian person in a negative light. Quote, the promotion of racist mascots creates non-inclusive learning environments for Native students, compounds challenges in promoting accurate portrayals of Indigenous cultures and traditions, and perpetuates prejudice and discrimination against Native peoples, the Association of Native Americans at Yale said in a statement on Facebook. Both the university and the athletics program apologized, the Yale Daily News and a New Haven Register reported. Mary Catherine Nagel, a citizen of the Cherokee Nation who serves as the executive director of the Yale Indigenous Performing Arts Program, had first posted the image of the program on Twitter this past Saturday. Quote, she said, cannot believe that Yale and Dartmouth would use such dehumanizing images of red face at a football game, Nagel, who is an attorney and advocate for Native women, wrote. Yale defeated Dartmouth at the game. Okay, well, we've really seen some stuff going on about Hurricane Matthew, but since really wasn't in the mainland, it did still affect some tribes. So out of North Carolina, Lumberton is part of a 4-county area of North Carolina that is home to 40,000 Lumbee tribal citizens. Lumberton, 8 miles from the Lumbee tribe of North Carolina's headquarters in Pembroke, is covered in water. Several thousand Lumbee citizens have been evacuated due to floodwaters rising into their homes. Thousands were without electricity. The Lumbee tribe hurricane response headquarters is staged at the Pembroke Boys and Girls Club in Pembroke. Any non-perishable donations, including bottled water, will be accepted and dispersed through the affected communities. Tribal staff and community volunteers has persistently worked to the best of their ability to ensure the basic needs of local citizens are being met. They're working in collaboration with the Red Cross, FEMA, and National Guard. The Lumbee tribe is also offering assistance to citizens who have been negatively impacted by the flood. Food for Lumberton community residents is being served at the Recreation Center. So, so there was, this tribe that was affected with flooding due to Hurricane Matthew. So hopefully they're doing a lot better. Well, out of Oklahoma, tribes in Oklahoma shared a record $132 million in gaming revenues with the state, according to a new report. The amount shared in fiscal year 2016 was 3% higher than the year prior, the State Office of Management and Enterprise Services said this past Wednesday. Increases were seen in revenues from Class 3 electronic devices and from table games. The record amount is not only good news for Oklahoma education funding, but also continues an upward trend since the first decline 2 years ago, the report stated. In total, tribes reported nearly $2.2 billion in Class 3 revenues at their facilities, according to the report. Their Class 3 gaming compacts require them to share a portion with the state. Since 2004, when voters approved the Class 3 gaming, tribes have shared more than $1.1 billion with the state. So it's interesting that they give this much money back to the state, but the state would not recognize Indigenous Peoples Day this past Monday, so ironic. All right. Well, and update on what's going on in North Dakota. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe continues to call for peace and prayer as authorities in North Dakota announce additional arrests of Dakota Access Pipeline resistors. Morton County County Sheriff Kyle Kirchmeyer said 27 people were arrested on Monday for unlawful activities at a construction site. Actress Shailene Woodley, who has used her celebrity to rally support for the No DAPL movement, is among those who are being charged for taking a stand against the pipeline. That was all occurring on private land, Kirchmeyer said during a press conference. Woodley broadcast her arrest live on Facebook in a video that has been viewed more than 3.4 million times as of the past Tuesday. The arrest came a day after a federal appeals court in Washington, D.C. issued an order that allows construction on the controversial pipeline to continue. The tribe called the ruling a disappointment, but reiterated the peaceful nature of the resistance movement on Monday. quote, any act of violence hurts our cause and is not welcome here. We invite all supporters to join us in prayer that ultimately the right decision, the moral decision, is made to protect our people, our sacred places, our land, and our resources, the tribe said in a statement on Facebook. Thousands of people from members of the Standing Rock Tribe, tribes across the nation, and First Nations in Canada, to non-Native supporters in the United States and around the world, have stood in solidarity against the harm and destruction caused by the Dakota Access Pipeline, the statement continued. We have stood side by side in peaceful prayer and will continue to do so as we fight to permanently protect that which is sacred to all of us. The order that was issued by the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals was not a ruling on the merits of the No DAPL lawsuit. It was only on the tribe's request for an injunction while it pursues the appeal in the case. The three judges assigned to the case even acknowledged that their decision was not the final word in the matter. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers haven't issued an easement for the pipeline to build on federal land at Lake Oahe, and the controversial and costly project remains in limbo until an answer comes. Still, the order marks the first favorable development for Dakota Access LLC, the partnership behind the pipeline, in more than a month. A temporary injunction had put a hold on construction for 20 miles on both sides of Lake Oahe, but that now is being lifted by the D.C. court. But time remains a critical issue for Dakota Access going forward. While construction on the east side of Lake Oahe is basically complete, the partnership still hasn't finished work on the west side, in an area where the tribe has documented the presence of sacred sites and burial grounds. Since most of the pipeline runs through private land, as the sheriff indicated, Dakota Access has been intent on building as close to Lake Oahe as possible, even up to the water's edge. The approach has been criticized as a gamble by one of the judges assigned to the tribe's case. Quote, if you're not going to get the permit to cross at the critical point, you're going to have to redirect the pipeline, right? Judge Thomas B. Griffith asked that at a October 5th hearing. Yes, Estrada responded. So it's a gamble, Griffith said. You're gambling. You're going to win. The Army Corps has not said when it will issue a decision on the timeline, but a statement from the Obama administration on Monday said the review process will be ending soon. Well, that's all your news across Indian country, letting you know what is going on out there. All right, we'll get back to the music. And I've been playing this new CD with Danny T and the Steely Thunder Band. And Danny is from the Nambe Pueblo. It's been playing a song called Alligator Boots, so I thought I'd play a different song. This one's called Irene, and you're listening to Native Spirit Radio here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
I said I'd
That was a Shawnee Stump Dance for you guys, and you're listening to Native Spirit Radio here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Rhonda, you're here, and it's about my time to be getting out of here, and Sunset Reggae will be coming up next for you guys, so make sure you stay tuned for that. And have a wonderful week. I'll be ending off with some Northern Cree, and this one's called Slickster. We'll see you again next Sunday.